am Plot on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Ian Coutts has written several books, including Brew North, How Canadians Made Beer and Beer Made Canada. He's written a new book, The Perfect Keg, Sewing, Scything, Malting, and Brewing My Way to the Best Ever Pint of Beer. He joins me now to talk about the effort he took to make beer from scratch, a 100-mile diet approach, as it were. It's a compelling read, and even though I don't drink beer, I found his adventures and misadventures fun to read. I'll ask him about all that he did, because he didn't use one of those beer-making kits which we see a lot of in stores and the sort. He made his own malt, grew his own barley and hops, too. It's a fun book and one that's informative. The writing of Ian Coutts has appeared in Canadian Geographic, the Globe and Mail, Quill and Quire, and Toronto Life. The website for more is at perfectkeg.wordpress.com. The book is published by Greystone. Please welcome to the Plot Online program, Ian Coutts. Mr. Coutts, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're in Ottawa today, is that correct?
Kingston.
Kingston.
Kingston. I've been all over the place. I was actually up in the Ottawa Valley where a lot of the book took place today.
Yeah, and so for people to try to put that in our minds, how far is Kingston from Ottawa?
2 hours.
I see, but okay. And so in Ottawa, your wife has a farm there, is that right?
In the Ottawa Valley.
I see.
This is a distinction Westerners won't get, but what it is the valley of the Ottawa River, which leads down to the city of Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
But also is a very interesting rural area, which has been settled for a very, very long time. It's got distinctive accent, distinctive folk music, very distinctive people. And that is actually where I undertook growing my beer from absolute scratch.
So you needed to have a farm, I guess, for all of this, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Now, see, I don't drink beer. I mean, last time I've had a beer is probably about 15 years ago. I didn't like it.
Sure.
But I do, you know, I drink other things. But what is it about beer that you like?
That I like about beer?
Yeah.
I guess if I had to say anything, I'd say it's beeriness. I like the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that it's not terribly strong in alcohol. The variety of it. I mean, beer is an incredibly varied drink. You know, different yeasts make a difference to how it ferments. Different malts give it different colors. The flavors can vary almost from anything that almost like a strange sour wine to something that tastes like almost nothing. You know, with sort of, you can have a Coors at one end, a Guinness beyond that, a Belgian triple, any number of things. So it's an incredibly varied drink. And that's something that's interesting about it. It's also a very old drink, which is something that interests me about it. It's been around a very, very long time.
Yeah, that's the thing that I read with interest in the book, is that it goes back a very long time, and I'm wondering, how did they make beer?
By accident, usually.
Yeah.
I think the first people who discovered it, what they found is somehow they managed to get some barley or something fermenting in water, and wild yeast got into it, and from there they got what's called a lambic beer, which is one that just occurs naturally when the yeast in the air falls into your vat. The Belgians still make beer that way, by the way, in some parts of Belgium. It's quite unusual. Uses a different yeast, and it's quite sour tasting. So they would have done it that way, and it was very much, for the longest time, by guess and by golly. People didn't really understand what yeast was. They knew there was this foam on top of beer that when it was fermenting, that if you saved it, you could use it to make more beer.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it was sort of almost a mixture of witchcraft and, you know, trial and error.
That's the thing that your book does. I mean, it's made me want to drink beer. And I'm
okay.
Wondering, yeah, see, now I'm wondering, now, can I, is there a way that I can grow to appreciate it, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think a friend of mine put it really well. It says, a lot of people think, I don't like beer. But what he says, and I think this is very accurate, is that you just haven't found the beer for you yet.
Mm.
So my view is for people like that is to sample them. You know, get away from your mainstream pale lagers and your light beers. And start exploring things in, you know, the craft beers. I think people would be surprised by what's out there. And I think in some ways it's as sophisticated as wine and as enjoyable.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we see it certainly in Vancouver. I mean, the craft beer scene has just exploded in the last couple of years. And you go to restaurants even, and they're serving flights of beer.
Yeah.
So you do suggest getting a flight of beer and seeing what you like
Going to a place like, you know, there's good micros and craft breweries all around Vancouver, and just seeing what they've got in them, seeing what various kinds of beer they have. Sometimes they have sample packs. Sometimes you can sample it while you're there. and just experiment and see what you like. It may not even be a particular, you know, one particular beer, maybe a type of beer that you find that you like a pale ale or, sort of something like that, or sort of a more interesting German lager. There's any number of ways of going at it.
Why has craft beer done so well in the last couple of years?
I think that, well, one of the reasons is I think it's like everything in North America. We got tired of uniformity. When we could get a uniform product, that was great for the very longest time, because for a lot of us, it was the first time we could afford to buy, you know, these products in
right.
Hamburg. And it was about wide distribution. But it's like our diet, it's like everything else we do with food or clothes or the music we listen to. We can get more and more particular. We can get specific. We can get quite local in our taste. I think people were looking for that. I think that a few 30 years ago, there was a great awareness that we were missing something, that we'd lost something, that once this had been a very varied and beverage, and that there were a lot of differences. There were regional differences and differences in type, and they'd gone away. And I think it was partly a leftover from the hippie thing, but I think it's partly also the yuppie thing, that we started going looking for, rediscovering old flavors and old kinds of beer, and then developing new ones.
When did you decide that you wanted to brew your own beer?
Well, I did it a long time ago just for fun and not terribly successfully. And when I got into it recently, it was back in, probably 2010. And one of the reasons was I'd written an earlier book called Brew North. And I was at a festival in Toronto where what I was doing is, I was there with a bunch of other beer writers and people were asking us questions. It was part of Craft Beer Week. And one of the people on the panel was a guy who made his own beer, and I was pretty impressed by that. And then someone asked the question, what are your beer ambitions? And I thought to myself, you know what I'd like my ambition would be? I'd like to get really good at making it. And the reason I'd like to get good at making it is because I'd really like to understand what it is. I kind of had not a superficial understanding, but, you know, an okay but hands-off understanding of what made certain beer, like what made a stout, or a pale ale, and that kind of thing. But I didn't really know the nuts and bolts of beer. I wanted to take it right apart, go right from the very beginning, and take it right through to learn about it. It's the world's third most popular beverage, and a lot of us drink it, but we don't really know anything about it.
It just seems like a lot of work, and in the course of the book, we do see that it is. But it's
it
not
is a lot of work. Yeah.
But it's not something that one can, you know, that one can't do, I guess.
One can do or one can't do.
Well, I mean, it is. It's not impossible, I should say.
No, it's not impossible
yeah.
at all. I don't know. There's certain parts of it. I'll tell you. I don't think I'll ever bother to grow my own barley again.
Uh-huh.
I had a lot of trouble with that. And there's some things like malting, which I'm glad I learned how to do, and I got pretty good at it. But I don't know that I bother with that. But one can grow one's own hops. One can find wild yeasts out there in nature. You can make, you know, pretty. I'm trying to think of the word for it, pretty original, pretty basic beer. You know what I mean? Really take it down to fundamentals. It's not hard to do. It's not at all.
And so, I mean, you took it to a different degree with growing your own stuff and the sort. But, I mean, we do see, as I mentioned in the introduction, we see these beer-making kits that one can buy. That's different altogether than what you did, right? I mean, yours involved was a more in-depth process.
Yeah, I mean, that's like to put into baking terms, those things are like buying a Duncan Hines mix. Mm. And what I was doing was like making a cake from scratch.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can learn to do it, and I don't make fun of those kits or the various steps that people take through beer making to get better and better at it, because they will all lead you to the point where you can make really, really good beer. That's another point about making beer as well, is, you know, not very many people make very good or even very drinkable homemade wine, but you can make really great homemade beer.
Yeah. So what was involved in all of this? I mean, how long does it take for, say, a keg to be brewed?
Well, that's an interesting question, because normally you'd say something like it would probably take, one day to do the actual beer making, if you know what I mean, pitch the yeast. It would sit for a week or two in the primary fermenter, then you put it over to a secondary. So the weird thing was, because I was using wild yeast, that took a lot longer. And then maybe 3 or 4 weeks after that to for it to condition either in the cask, which is the way I did it, or in bottles. But in fact, if you think about it, because I was growing the hops and harvesting the barley and everything else and finding the yeast, it probably took me about a year to make a barrel of beer.
I see.
I could do it considerably faster in future, though.
Yeah. And does it cost a great deal? I mean, did this all cost you a lot of money?
Nope. I mean, the most elaborate piece of equipment I got, here's the sort of things I used, a 5-gallon pot, the kind of thing that you use to make jam in, 20 feet of copper piping, which wasn't like a still or anything, but I turned it into a cooler to help me chill the wort, which is what you call, what you're going to make into beer, sort of this, it's the, what, the water that's had the grains boiled in it for about an hour. You know, a big glass bottle, 5-gallon glass bottle called a carboy, a plastic tub about the same size. The most sophisticated piece of equipment I got was one of those bubblers that you put in a fish tank, and that was so when I was malting barley, I could soak it in water but keep it oxygenated. So if I spent, I had to buy bottles as well, but outside, $300.
Really? Yeah.
Absolute outside. And I still use all the same equipment, right?
And
the gift keeps on giving.
Yeah, so you did need, I guess you needed the farm because you needed to grow all this stuff. But did you need the space to put it in? Did you need a lot of that?
Nope. I mean, I had about I'm trying to remember what it was, about 6% of an acre. I can't remember how many square feet. That was for the barley. But for hops, you could grow hops in an apartment balcony.
Yeah, I remember in an episode of Three's Company, Mr. Roper did that.
Yeah, well, that naughty Mr. Roper. Yeah, that's exactly. But it doesn't take a lot of room, and the equipment doesn't take a lot of room. You know, I mean, if I really wanted to kick out, we live in a fairly small house. I might have a second refrigerator just for beer.
Yeah.
But I don't even have that, and the other equipment takes virtually no room at all. It doesn't cost a lot. I mean, you can go crazy. I mean, you can buy setups, an amateur setups that cost thousands of dollars, but you don't actually need those things. If you know what I mean. You can start simple and start small. And if you wanted to build it up and you got ambitious, you could do that.
So, is it foolproof? I mean, could you screw this up if
oh, sure. Yeah, you can blow it at almost any point.
So what's the worst case scenario? It's not drinkable, I guess, right?
It just goes off. It won't poison you. You can't go blind. There's none of those dangers. It's not like sort of making moonshine.
Yeah.
But the real thing about brewing, this is the interesting thing. I worked for a while in the book in a real craft brewery called Lake of Bays Brewing in Ontario. And the big difference there was, and this is what I noticed, and this is like the food industry in general, it was almost as if cleaning was the most important thing and making beer was secondary.
Mm.
And as long as everything's clean, and I noticed this whenever you talk to amateurs, they'll often go, you know, the first time they brew beer and they've got their pots and everything like that, and they've got their sort of sterilizer, they're very careful. They get everything spotlessly clean, and it works. You know, the beer works. Everything's perfect. And the second time they do it, they're just as exacting. The third time, they're starting to relax a little bit. You know, they're not getting too worried about it. They know they can do it. They're feeling comfortable. And so what happens is they don't wash things properly. There's bacteria in it, and the beer spoils.
Yeah. Well, I guess so. That's in every kind of food preparation, I suppose.
Yep, exactly. It's no different than any other sort of food prep. Yeah. I think the big thing is it's probably a lot of women know this because they cook a lot, but most guys, especially kind of guys who get into making beer, it's the first time they've ever done any cooking in their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, did you know a lot of people who did this or who do this?
I've met them since I've been doing it. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to the American Homebrewers Association convention next week, and I'm doing a Canadian Homebrewers Association the week after that in Toronto. So you start to bump into them, if you know what I mean. And most little places, I mean, most big places, Vancouver would be like this, you know, there's sort of homebrew stores, so you start to know the guys there, and you develop a bit of a relationship with them, and you talk about them. But no, I'm not part of sort of a huge, you know, legion of home beer makers.
But this book probably will encourage a lot of people to take this up, right?
Well, I guess it will. I mean, I think it's... What I really did with the book, sure, I want people to take it up, and if they think they can do it, because they can. That's the thing. Is as long as they're careful, they can do it, and they don't need a lot of fancy gear. But what I really wanted to do was to make people who drink beer, who enjoy beer, think about beer. You know, tell them, here's what, you know, you've got a glass in your hand, you really enjoy that, do you know what it is? Do you know how it's made? Do you understand this? You know, yeast is the great ingredient. Do you understand yeast? Do you get what malting works? It's sort of like that. I wanted to take it apart, almost like an old clock, and put it back together for people.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Because, I mean, when I go to a bar or something, or a restaurant, I never think of ordering beer because I don't like it. But, I mean, after reading this book, you do grow an appreciation for it because it does take a hell of a lot of time to make.
Well, and it's fascinating. I mean, it does take a lot to make, and it's evolved over a very, very long period of time. And a lot of thought's gone into it. And it from that point of view, I do think that makes me appreciate it more. Just because I now know so much about it.
Yeah. So how did you get to the perfect keg? I mean, what do you know now that you didn't know before, say?
How did I get to the perfect keg? I think one of the things we did is, you know, all the way along, I mean, we were having disasters and accidents and, you know, crop failures and everything else. We sort of got, when I started off, I was going, you know, we'll get this yeast, we'll get this, and we'll make this. And when we got to the perfect keg, we suddenly realized, you know what, we're going to let our ingredients tell us what to make. That sounds like a crazy thing to say, but it was sort of a reverse.
Uh-huh.
It was getting very tied up with the local and what I call the beer war, which is like the terroir, only it's not, it's the beer war. So we were going to go, okay, well, if we've got this strange yeast that we've got, which we got out of like apple cider, which came off the apples on the farm, and if we've got these particular hops that we've made that are sort of quite citrusy, and we've got some honey from the bees that lived on the farm, which was to help give the yeast more to work with, what can we make? And so we sort of said, well, let's let it teach us what to do. And so what it taught us to do, encouraged us to do, was a beer very like what they call a saison, which is a particularly Belgian beer. So we kind of went backwards. Instead of imposing our thoughts on the ingredients imposed themselves on us. As crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
But what we came up with in the end was a specific beer from one place in the world.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and it seemed like, I mean, it, at times it is a challenging endeavor, but, I mean, you did have fun, and at
yes.
the end of it, it was more than just, say, the experience of making a keg of beer. You got something more out of it, and I'm wondering what that was.
I mean, an appreciation of the ingredients, an appreciation of how interesting beer is, how exacting it is to make, and we're still making it.
Yeah.
You know, and we took that idea that, as I was saying, that saison, which is the beer with the yeast from the farm. And even though we're not using our own malt anymore, we are using our own hops and the hard water from the farm and everything like that, and making a beer that really is unique to that place. So, and we're carrying it on. We're developing that. So it's going to be our own, you know, our own beer.
So other than
a unique beer.
Yeah. So other than you and your wife who drink the beer, what do other people think about it? Do they like it?
I think they're quite. I've had, when I did sort of the unveiling of the Perfect Keg, which was sort of in September of 2013, I think, in Toronto, I had a number of beer, experts there, beer writers, guys who've made a living out of taking beer tours, that kind of thing. They were very interested in it. They thought it really worked. They thought it still needed some work, but they thought that they were intrigued by it, and they thought we'd really come up with something. They were also interested because as far as, like, I was talking to various people, a guy, Jordan St. John, who writes for the Sun newspapers on beer and things.
Mm-hmm.
As far as he knows, no one else has ever done this. So that was quite interesting to have been the first person to take it. I mean, maybe a farmer in the 14th century did it, but, you know, someone in the 21st century, we're pretty well in.
And throughout this country, because we have different climates and we grow different things, we can do what you did and sort of grow stuff in the area and use that, right?
Yep. Everywhere. I mean, there's no problem. There's a lot of hop production in British Columbia, to give you an example. There's a hell of a lot of barley growing on the plains. You know, Saskatchewan and Alberta provide most of it for the commercial beer brewing industry in this country. Ontario, same thing. Quebec, yep. And hops are very hardy. So there's really, and we've always got great water. So there's really no part of Canada, maybe Tuktoyaktuk, I'm just guessing, where you couldn't do something like this. But most places, there'd be no problem at all. You can certainly grow hops virtually anywhere in Canada.
So you mentioned that you're going on tour with this and going to various events and the sort of beer events. So you have continued making your own beer, right?
Yep.
And so how many different sort of kinds of beer do you have? Because you have recipes in the book here at the back.
Yep. Well, a lot of the recipes, some of those were given to me by people who I worked with who taught me things along the way, and so I'd ask them for a recipe. For instance, the guy from Black Creek Pioneer Village in Toronto, who ran a pioneer brewery, which was really like a literally 19th century brewery, he gave me a recipe and other ones. And some of the recipes were things that we evolved to teach ourselves as we went along. And the perfect keg recipe is in there. And we've continued to evolve that recipe. That's, as I say, that's our saison. It's the one using the wild yeast that we found, which was analyzed at the University of British Columbia, by the way. And we've continued to work on that one, and we've probably done 3 or 4 iterations of it since then.
Yeah.
And we've got one going right now, and I'll probably do, you know, just keep going. I don't see any reason to stop. My hops came back this year better than ever, so that was great. My yeast is thriving, so as long as I've got those, I'll be creating my unique beer, and I'll probably make more conventional ones as well.
Yeah. It just seems like a fun experience, and it's, you know, and as I said, I don't drink beer, but I mean, the next time that I go to a restaurant or something like that, I'll certainly have one, and I'll toast you and your effort, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was fun. I met interesting people.
Yeah.
I had to learn a lot to do it. You know, one keeps picking up little bits of science, little bits of history, you know, as you go along. That was fun. I got to do things I'd never done. Like, I worked on a bottling line in a craft brewery. I was an apprentice, an assistant to a guy, as I say, who ran the brewery at Black Creek Pioneer Village. So I kept getting exposed to all these sort of wonderful worlds. I got to do some farming,
yeah.
You know. I got to brew beer. So I think there were just so many of those elements, and it gave me a real appreciation for beer and the people who make it, and I'm very happy that I did it, and that's why I wanted to share it with people as well, because I think even if, you know, I just think, as you say, even if you don't want to make beer, if you don't want to go to the level I took it to, I think you'll appreciate beer more when you read this book.
Absolutely, yeah. This is such a fun book, and it's a wonderfully funny book as well. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you.
The book is called The Perfect Keg, Sewing, Scything, Malting, and Brewing My Way to the Best Ever Pint of Beer. It's published by Greystone. Its author Ian Coots joined me on the line from Kingston in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Punter.